from the Xfinity Studios at WVON. You're listening to American Heroes, hosted by Cliff Curry on WVON AM 1690.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is, of course, the Talk of Chicago, 1690 WVON. I'm Cliff Kelly. This is America's Heroes Group. And, of course, first thing we want to do on this day is wish everyone a Happy New Year. Yay, everything. Everybody a happy New Year. America's Heroes Group is proudly sponsored by East Lake Management and Development Corporation, 2850 South Michigan Avenue, Chicago, Illinois, 60616. Office number is 312-842-5500. America's Heroes Group is sponsored by Pearl's Place, Down Home Cooking and the Buffet. Southern Cooking at 3901 South Michigan, Chicago, Illinois. The phone number, 877-275-5852. Also, America's Heroes Group, She Serves, She Matters partner and sponsor, National Veterans United, Women's United, I should say, at NWVU 8620 South Pulaski at the lower level, Chicago, Illinois, 60652. Office number 872-731-2150. Website www.nwvu.org. Also, America's Heroes Group is proudly sponsored by attorney Steve Seidman of Seidman, Margulis, and Fairman, LLP, 20 South Clark Street, 2 First National Plaza, Suite 700, Chicago, Illinois, 60603. Toll-free number 888-837-3275. The office is 312-781-1977. I am Cliff Kelly as the host, America's Heroes Group Roundtable Healthcare Policy. I am the host, Cliff Kelly. Our executive producer is Glenda Smith. Our digital media producer is Manny Corazzari. And hope all of you, as I said, had just a great new year. We're going to start off. Our first panelist is Suzanne Gordon, author, Wounds of War, co-editor, The Culture and Politics of Healthcare, Work, Senior Policy Fellow, Veterans Healthcare Policy Institute. We're going to be talking about VA healthcare. And first, let me wish you, Suzanne, a very, very happy new year.
You too, Cliff. Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you. So tell us what is important. There's a lot of things, obviously, that are important. What's the first things we need to hear?
Well, I think think the most important thing for 2020 will be citing the continued efforts of the Trump administration VA leadership, Secretary Robert Wilkie, to decimate the Veterans Health Administration, which is the largest healthcare system in the country and the one that is particularly specialized in taking care of the complex needs of our nation's veterans. And in the coming year, we'll see more problems because of the passage of the VA Mission Act of 2018, the outsourcing of more care of veterans to the private sector, the failure of the administration to fully staff and fund the VA, and efforts to really deplete the budgets for clinical care at the VA. And those are challenges that we will see in the coming year.
Now, this is so important, Suzanne. And let me mention the fact, because I'm sure people will hear these things and want to know something more. The WVON call-in number is 312-374-8130. Tell us, why is this, what you're saying does not sound good at all. Tell us why this is happening.
Well, I think that President Trump claims he's the most veteran-centric president in the nation's history, and I think that's the farthest thing from the truth, and his policies hurt veterans in a number of ways, but one of the main ways is the attacks on the Veterans Health Administration, and 9 million veterans, 9 million of the country's 19.2 million veterans, which is almost half, depend on the VA for their health care, mm-hmm. and it's a really great health care system. And but it's, you know, it has a very big pot of money attached to it, which private sector providers would like to get a hold of, $80 to $90 billion. It's a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And there are people who are intent on privatizing it. I mean, we're going to see a lot of problems in the Senate, because the Senate Veterans Affairs Committee has just been taken over by Senator Jerry Moran, who is a real privatizer. He receives more money from the Koch brothers, who are very anti-VA, than any other senator. And he was very opposed to even the current version of the Mission Act of 2018, because it didn't go far enough in privatizing VA care. And he wanted even more veterans to be seen in the private sector. And this in spite of the fact that we have study after study after study showing that private sector providers don't know about and even don't want to know about the very specific complex problems of veterans. And, you know, this issue of the VA and the future of the VA is super important. I mean, I'm talking to you today from Los Angeles. I'm attending the Student Veterans of America conference, and it's supposed to be a group that's fighting for student veterans, and particularly younger veterans, and there's been no mention, hardly, of the VA or VA privatization in this conference. It's really extraordinary. I mean, this is the number one challenge that veterans face, that, you know, and this is, I think there can be no more important moment to talk about this when we see the conflict that is brewing in the Middle East. I mean, God forbid, if we had another war, you know, we'd have more people coming back injured, more veterans to take care of. And right now, the VA is being put in a position where it can't adequately take care of veterans it already has enrolled, because they are not hiring. There's 49,000 vacancies in the VA, and the secretary, who is statutorily required to run and fully staff the system, has said unabashedly that he's not interested, that's not a priority for him, to be hiring more people. And when you talk about vacancies in the VA, you're talking about positions that exist, full-time equivalent positions that already exist, and these vacancies don't even cover new positions that are needed to take to create new programs, et cetera, et cetera. And so how can we be contemplating an increase in escalating conflicts in the world and at the same time be demolishing or jeopardizing the healthcare system that would take care of these people who fight for us and our freedoms and our nation? And we're taking apart the administration, along with a lot of conservatives and health industry people outside the VA, really are targeting the VA and are quite happy that there are vacancies, because vacancies cause delays, and then delays justify more outsourcing to private sector doctors and hospitals and other providers.
And this is, where is Senator Moran from, Suzanne?
I think he's from Georgia. I'm sorry, I can't. Maybe, yeah. Okay. Maybe he's not from Georgia. He's not from Georgia. I'm not sure where he's from. I think he might be from Kentucky, but I wouldn't swear to that.
Okay. Something you just mentioned, you brought it up, the Middle East. What do you think about that?
Oh, well, don't get me started. I mean, I think this is folly. And it's, again, an unconsidered sort of, it's like the tweets, you know, it's just sort of a knee-jerk reaction to escalate conflict in the world. It would be tragic if this was about taking attention off impeachment, which I think it might be.
To take attention off of what?
Well, I mean, one way that you can take attention off the failures a president or administration
right.
or impeachment is to start a conflict.
Sure. Right, right.
And people are focused on that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think this is a tragic development. There were signs of positive movement in Iran and Iraq because of protests against problems in those regimes, and now everybody who was not united is now united against the U.S. I mean, this is not a good idea. I'm not a foreign policy expert. There are many people that I would recommend you have on your show who could talk more about this, Andrew Bacevich being one of them, but who's a retired, I'm not sure if he's a lieutenant colonel or a colonel, taught at West Point, is a brilliant historian, and he taught at Boston University, but I don't think this is a good idea. But the point I'm trying to make is that when it comes to the VA, you want to have a very robust healthcare system for veterans, because
mm-hmm.
we don't know
sure.
when there'll be another conflict. I mean, there's a lot of talk about American veteran population going down from 19 million to 15 million in 2043, which is, by the way, 23 years from now. A lot could happen then. I think you're going to see a lot more conflict in the world because of the failure of this administration and other places around the world to deal with climate change. I mean, Australia is burning up.
Yeah, right.
We're having, you know, that's going to create a lot of conflict. The Pentagon, I mean, it's interesting that while the administration is denying the reality of climate change, Pentagon is focused very heavily on the reality of it and looking about that, how that can create conflict. You're going to, you know, you have the potential for
mm-hmm.
other conflicts. And even if you don't have any conflicts, and even if they get a handle on climate change, which is a very big if, you know, even if you had 15 million veterans and not 19, the veterans from Iraq and Afghanistan and the post 9/11 conflicts and even the post 9/11 military have a lot of healthcare problems. They have, because if you just look at people who served in combat, as you know, Cliff, you know, people who would have died in Vietnam or Korea or World War II, mm-hmm. they're living today because of battlefield triage and
right.
technological advances, but they're living with humongous, you know, right. healthcare problems mm-hmm. that will last a lifetime. A friend of mine is in Iraq. Military vet, he has 16 different problems and he's 32 years old.
Oh, wow. Yeah,
so
sure.
in 23 years, he's going to be 55. He has the body, he was told, of a 60-year-old. By the time he's 50, he's going to have the body, what, of a 90-year-old? I mean, people, you know, when you look at health care, you can't just look at how many bodies there will be. You have to look
right.
at mm-hmm. what are the problems of those bodies?
The
and if
quality.
You have 12 different, mm-hmm. you know, if you have 15 million people to take care of, or even half of those people to take care of, and, you know, they have 12 different conditions, that's really different than taking care of, you know, 15 million people who have, you know, just, you know, some one chronic condition or,
sure.
or no
mm-hmm.
condition.
No, you're right. You're right.
For the flu, you know?
Yeah, that's right, the quality of
life. I mean, it's
life.
Kind of like, yeah. you know, I always tell people when you're looking at healthcare, it's like if you have two parents and two kids, you know, and the two kids are highly motivated and they get their homework done on time and they clean their room and, you know, they help with the chores, you might need only one parent. You can leave them alone sometimes. If you have two parents and you have two kids, and they one has, you know, Down syndrome and the other has cystic fibrosis or whatever, you need maybe five parents
mm-hmm.
to take care
yeah.
of them.
Yeah,
that's it's not a question of just, you know, stats. It's a
right,
question
numbers,
of
yeah.
mm-hmm. not quantity, it's quality.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Good point. Not quality. Yeah,
and
it's quality, not quantity. Yeah. One thing you mentioned, Suzanne, since you brought it up, I thought was... you know, this whole thing going on in the Middle East, some people, you even brought up the fact that it could be a diversion from the impeachment, right?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, I think you're right on that when you brought it up. But listen to this. According to what we heard, Trump said, quote, he, meaning the deceased general, was planning an attack, but we got him, end quote. That's what our commander in chief said.
Yeah, but
said.
There's no proof of this.
Exactly. That's what I'm asking you. Where does this come from?
Well, I mean, did we not learn anything with Iraq when Colin Powell compromised his stellar career by saying that Iraq had chemical weapons mm-hmm. when it was clear they didn't have any?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I should be more judicious, except I'm so upset by this. These people will do anything. I mean, Donald Trump is a pathological narcissist. And this is a mental illness diagnosis. It means the person has no conception of other... I mean, this is not just me. He's clearly, I think, has a, you know, serious mental illness. He is, you know, pathological or malignant narcissist. I do not think he is capable of factoring in the consequences of his actions on other people. And the fact that we might, you know, for his narcissistic needs, be sacrificing our young men and women mm-hmm, mm-hmm. to go into battle for nothing. I mean, we already have Iraq and Afghanistan veterans supporting efforts to end these forever wars because they were there.
Mm-hmm.
And they see that it isn't, that it's worthless, that it's created more problems. It is not making us safer. It is making us, you know, it is endangering us. It created ISIS. It's
yeah.
created instability. I mean, veterans who are listening in should be calling their Congress people and saying that they should take control. It should be Congress that declares war, not one man or woman. For their personal mm-hmm. needs or gain. Mm-hmm. And this, you know, I've seen this. I mean, having spent years in VA facilities, war is not a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bad idea. The worst idea. You should only do it when you must.
Mm-hmm.
And even the war on Hitler was not necessary because he could have been stopped a decade before.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And none of these 60 million people would have had to have lost their lives if he had been stopped when he could have been stopped. So to invite catastrophe, you know, I mean, it's one thing if you fail to stop it, but to invite it.
To invite it, yeah. Suzanne, I mean, you're great, and of course your knowledge and study and all. And our last minute, where do you think this is going?
Well, I really think veterans need to speak up, and military service members need to speak up, and we need to defend the VA. We need to adequately defend our country, and if we believe that America has standing as a shining light in the world, then we have to shine. And you don't shine by creating unnecessary wars, and you don't shine by killing an excellent healthcare system. You shine by defending peace and promoting peace and defending high-quality healthcare.
I totally agree with you, and I think you're doing a great job. We are so pleased to have had you on, Suzanne, and I'm sure we'll be asking you again for your expertise.
And, thank you, Cliff. I so appreciate what you do.
And thank you so much. And we'll be talking soon. And Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you. Bye.
Thank you so much. Suzanne Gordon, really telling it as it is. That's what she says. Veterans should call their Congress people. That's what she's saying. Congress is to declare war, not the president. And a narcissistic and some other adjectives that Suzanne used. Obviously not a great fan of the commander-in-chief, but, you know, she's right. That's what needs to be done. And just hopefully that, you know, this is going to work out, because it's going to be very, very difficult if this thing goes farther. It could be horrible. We have a caller, but we have to take a break. I'm Cliff Kelly. This is America's Heroes Group. Stay with us. We'll be back with more after this.
Hi, I'm Cliff Kelly, Vietnam veteran and host of America's Heroes Group, the game changer in radio, print, and digital media programming. We are a roundtable talk show where information, resources, and referrals are provided intentionally every Saturday to empower our military population on WVON 1690 AM, the iHeart Radio app, from 4 to 6 p.m. Central Standard Time. Please visit our website at www.americashg.org.
Hi, this is Cliff Kelly, the host of America's Heroes Group. If you or a loved one has been injured in an accident or the result of malpractice, you have only one chance to get the compensation you deserve. You need a law firm you can trust with experience and resources who will fight on your behalf. With a proven track record of excellence both in and out of the courtroom, call Seidman, Margulis, and Fairman at 312-781-1977 for a free consultation, or visit SeidmanLaw.net. That's Seidman, S-E-I-D-M-A-N, Law.net.
Hi, we're the National Women Veterans United, the proud sponsors and partners of the Americans Hero Group.
Our mission is to ensure that women veterans are aware and have access to their VA benefits, resources, and entitlements. We monitor current or pending legislation that may impact VA eligibility and services.
We're located at 7907 South Racine in Chicago, Illinois.
And we provide a safe place for women to come relax. We have a meditation room. They can get food, clothing, housewares, whatever emergency services they may need.
We're the only Women Veterans Center in the state of Illinois. We are members of the Army, Navy, Marines, Air Force, Coast Guard, National Guard, and the Reserves.
Hey, Cliff, where can a veteran business owner go on the south side of Chicago for breakfast, lunch, and dinner meetings?
I'm a veteran, and that's an easy answer. Pearl's Place on 39th and Michigan. Pearl's Place has free parking available across the street. Reasonably priced, quality food that tastes delicious. Veteran owners, there's no place like Pearl's Place.
Hi,
Hi, I'm Sister Soldier, proud partner of She Voices on America's Heroes Group. She serves, she matters, where your change becomes empowered. Also, watch me on the web at SheVetInspires.com or YouTube. Remember, I'm every woman because I am just like you.
Good afternoon, good afternoon. This is the Talk of Chicago, 1690 WVON. I'm Cliff Kelly. On the 4th, Happy New Year to everyone. This is America's Heroes Group Roundtable Public Policy. And January is Cervical Health Awareness and National Blood Donor Month. I'm Cliff Kelly, as I mentioned. Our executive producer is Glenda Smith. Our digital media producer is Manny Cornazari, who always does a great job. He's all dressed up today. I couldn't say this earlier because my producer would not allow me to. But since everybody here is friendly and all, is anybody here high?
the streets smell a little bit different.
I'm hot. I'm that all these people are making this money. We're not participating in
That's
it.
That's true.
I'm a little upset about
Hopefully
that.
Hopefully, going to work that out. Our panelist, Colonel Dr. Damon Arnold. How are you, sir?
Fine, sir.
Good, good, good. The wonderful Rochelle Crump. How are you?
I'm president and counter for, and I'm not high, sir.
Okay. Attorney Ernesto Borges, counselor. Okay?
Hey, Cliff, and Happy New Year to everybody.
Thank you. Yeah. And, of course, our money man, Sean Claiborne. I bet you he could get the money for us that we need. Sean, how are you?
Try.
Yeah.
Doing well. Happy New Year.
We are going to go to a CNN audio clip, and then I'm going to talk about that with Dr. Arnold.
Christian, give us the global perspective on where this leaves America this morning and our allies, because Benjamin Netanyahu, fully supportive of Israel, fully behind the U.S. on this. But France, the French government this morning, says the world is now a more dangerous place.
Well, you know, you heard Secretary Pompeo say to John that the French are wrong. I mean, he categorically said that. Remember that on the eve of the Iraq war, the U.S. invasion of Iraq in March of 2003, then President Chirac said the United States was going to open a can of worms, and France did not go along with this action and wanted more time to figure out what exactly was the intelligence with the weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. And President Chirac was proved right. I think the French have a huge history in that region. So do the British. So do many other people who not only have a history and a diplomatic history, but also have people and personnel in the region. So that is going to be, again, something to watch, because as everybody has said, it's unlikely that Iran would take on the United States in any effort at symmetrical warfare. It's very, very unlikely. It hasn't happened in the past. It's unlikely to happen now. But the asymmetrical, the ability to lash out in many parts of that region is clear and present. And it is the reason, or at least one of the main reasons, why successive U.S. presidents from George W. Bush to Barack Obama and up until now President Obama have not, sorry, President Trump, have not taken this massive escalatory step. And remember, Qasem Soleimani was at the height of his power when he was taken out. Unlike Osama bin Laden, who was a forgotten, you know, nothing burger, sort of hiding in a, you know, villa in Pakistan. But it's not the person you take out, it's what they leave behind, and the tentacles, and who comes next. Al-Qaeda terrorism did not end with the sidelining of Osama bin Laden. ISIS has not ended with the killing of al-Baghdadi. So if you're trying to end whatever's happening, this is a major escalation, and we need to see what the plan is.
Also, another note, obviously, Soleimani, for better or for worse, and this isn't a value judgment, he was a government official. That's what differentiates him from bin Laden as well. So you were killing a government official with this, and that has different implications. Christian, we have to let you go in about 20 seconds. The U.S. relationship with Iraq, the Iraqi Prime Minister Abdel al-Mahdi condemned this action. It's a violation of the U.S. agreement to station troops in Iraq. What will this do to the U.S. presence there?
Well, overnight, the U.S. missile attacks on the Al-Khatib, the Hezbollah Al-Khatib base, changed the U.S.-Iraq relationship. Iraq suddenly went, and this is what experts are telling me, from, you know, demonstrating against Iranian presence and others to demonstrating against the United States. Did the United States expect its embassy in Iraq, one of the most guarded embassies in the world, to be breached by pro-Iranian militias in Baghdad? Did the United States expect that when it retaliated for the killing of that American contractor? And now the government of Iraq is under massive pressure. We'll see how it plays out and whether these Shiite militias, whether it's Muqtada al-Sadr in Iraq, whether it's Hassan Nasrallah, the head of Hezbollah in Lebanon, you know, what is the pressure from the streets? And, of course, what will Iran do? I mean, the idea of Iran wanting now to do that famous photo op that President Trump wanted back in September at the UN, it's over. They're talking about revenge now. And so we just simply don't know what's going to happen. And remember, the French are saying it's more dangerous because Emmanuel Macron was the mediator between President Trump and Hassan Rouhani, trying to get that relationship back on track. But the U.S. have gone from maximum economic pressure to now military action.
Very interesting. WVON call in number 312-374-8130. Doctor, you are, of course, a Dr. Arnold, a combat vet, and we got more. Oh, I didn't know we have more.
Lawmakers this morning are demanding more details from the president about the U.S. airstrike that killed a top Iranian commander in Iraq, with rising concerns about escalating tensions. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi declaring the strike, ordered by the president and resulting in the death of a top Iranian general, lacked authorization, and demanding the Trump administration immediately brief lawmakers, releasing a statement warning tonight's airstrike risks provoking further dangerous escalation of violence, adding the full Congress must be immediately briefed on the serious situation and on the next steps under consideration by the administration. House Intelligence Committee Chairman Adam Schiff adding, Congress didn't authorize, and American people don't want a war with Iran. All steps must now be taken to protect our forces against the almost inevitable escalation and increased risk. Several Republicans echoing that call for congressional consultation, including Senator Mitt Romney, who urged the administration to pursue a coherent strategy and promising to press for additional details. Overall, reaction was mostly split down party lines, with the president's allies praising the move. House Republican leader Kevin McCarthy tweeting, Soleimani was a terrorist. President Trump and our brave service members just reminded Iran and the world that we will not let attacks against Americans go unpunished. Senator Tom Cotton tweeting, Soleimani got what he richly deserved. And all those American soldiers who died by his hand also got what they deserved.
That's interesting. Yeah, Dr. Arnold. From a combat veteran and all, what do you think about this?
Well, it's really very, very disturbing. You know, the Iran's Revolutionary Guards Quds Force is where this General Qasem Soleimani was really in charge. He was doing a lot of operations against U.S. Soldiers and military personnel, caused the death of a lot of people in Iraq. and throughout the region. But one of the things that in order to go forward, you have to actually base your actions on reliable information coming from the people who are in your intelligence agencies, the people who are actually on the ground there, your combat commanders, knowing exactly what's going on. Also, there was a kind of, as Nancy Pelosi said, there was a need to go to Congress first just to explain things. So to take an action like this, and as we know, we have been having problems with veracity mm-hmm. and statements coming from people who are surrounding the White House. And that actually gives me a lot of concern, a deep, deep concern. Now you've actually set something into motion that's during an election year.
That's right.
That you are actually dividing people not only within this country but also in those countries overseas. Now, if, we were in Iraq, and we've had a relationship with them since going into the war about moving in towards a democratic kind of basis for this, you know, for the government. But Iraq also relies on Iran as far as supplies, as money, food, mm-hmm. all kinds of things that they have an exchange relationship with in the Middle East.
Right.
And again, you know, it goes back to what Colin Powell said when we entered the war initially, you know, you break it, you own it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the question is, are we going to own this, and who's going to pay the price? Is it going to be our military personnel paying the price for something that wasn't really well thought out? We already have troops going overseas. Godspeed with them. And
absolutely. This is a very unfortunate situation, actually, to do this, because a lot of people are thinking that this has to do with impeachment. It has to do with all kinds of things. And Sean, what do you think about this?
Well, almost like it seems like a case, like you alluded to, of a wag the dog case.
Yeah.
As a dog, as opposed to
wag
dog
the
wagging
tail.
The tail.
Yeah, right,
wagging
right,
the dog
yeah,
instead.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. But the issue, I think that I think is complicated in this is the fact that it's a very, very tense moment. And what Dr. Arnold talked about is also what do you do in the aftermath. I personally don't see this turning into another Iraq at this point. I mean, there's a lot of things that are different between Iraq and Iran. When we went into Iraq and Afghanistan, it was we're going after the Taliban to take down the regime. We're not necessarily trying to take on a regime in Iran. You know, and the Iranians are very, very smart about what they're trying to do as far as their retaliation tactics. More than likely, which is even more scarier in a lot of different ways, this could unfold in ways that's never actually happened anywhere else in history. As opposed to, because they don't do wars as, you know, they know they can't take us on one-on-one. Mm-hmm. And the Ayatollah Khomeini is not trying to step down and leave power. Iran is in a very difficult situation because they have a whole younger generation that does not like the government. And that's what Donald Trump is also trying to capitalize on. Some people are actually cheering that this general was assassinated in Iran.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, the thing is, now once you get to a situation where Iranians start to retaliate, they can do it the ways they've done it in the past. We might have another 9/11 on our hands. We might have cities and things like that under attack. They're not going to go with, you know, they're not going to do the same stuff they did in France, like we talked about, like they had on the news clip. France knows firsthand about what happens when you piss off the Iranians and piss off Muslims. They've had the incident where a gunman went out and shot up a newspaper office. Mm-hmm. One of the leading newspapers, Le Monde in France, was completely shot up. And they had people that died in that massacre because they were, and these were militant, trained people that were, you know, going into that situation and carry that attack out. It's not going to be on that level. It's going to be probably 10 times greater than that mm-hmm. on retaliating against us because we did something way more serious.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Yeah, we have an audio clip from CNN. If we do, we will take it.
New this morning, could 18-year-old women have to register for the U.S. military draft system? Now, the system set up to draft men over 18 for military service is in case of extreme emergency. But now a U.S. District Court judge has ruled male-only registration is unconstitutional. The Selective Service System argued that a 1981 Supreme Court ruling said women could be excluded from a draft because they were not, quote, similarly situated with men for draft purposes. However, Judge Gray Miller ruled men and women are similarly situated. The judge did not issue an injunction. We'll keep an eye on what happens next.
Interesting. And, of course, we have to go to Rochelle for that. Rochelle, what do you think about that?
On the selective service?
Yes.
I missed it because it didn't sound for me. Yeah, my sound was gone. But that's
Talking about drafting 18-year-old women.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You know, and I looked up some of the figures on that, and I found that with the selective service, they said that the age of 18 is like 91%, and 25 years is nearly 17 million, you know. And then when you look at registration versus recruitment, you know, those are different numbers, I'm sure, and I'm sure it's going to get smaller with recruitment. And they're already struggling with recruitment and retention as it is, you know, and they've been talking about that for a very long time. Mm-hmm. And when you look at these young people, and now, you know, there's so many things that they're challenged with in terms of, you know, just their daily lives, whether or not they're going to be ready to take on a task of going with a draft, I doubt it very seriously, you know. And then the other thing is, look at the free world now that we have, and I don't want to bring this up again, we don't need to go into discussion, but what impact is it going to have now that we have recreational marijuana? You know, what impact is it going to have on those who basically would be mind, body, and willing? You know, will they be turned away? Will we use them? You know, look at how we put so much stress on the Iraq and Afghanistan military men and women who are still in the armed forces. You know, can they stand more deployment? You know, because it started off bad when it first got started. If you remember, they were going to deployment for over 2 years, you know, and then it dropped back to 1 year, you know, by law. So it's an act of Congress that would have to take place in order for us to do that. Right now, I don't see where Congress is going to go along with that. I just don't see it. They're already surprised that he pushed the button. You know, so, and I don't know why they were surprised, because he does what he wants to do, you know, and they haven't listened to him thus far. So, I mean, he hasn't listened to them. So it's going to be tough. It'll be rough.
Good point. Excellent point. WVON call-in number is 312-374-8130. If you'd like to join us, certainly feel free to do that. We have a CNN audio clip. Listen up.
It is inappropriate, in my judgment, for senators on either side of the aisle to prejudge the evidence before they have heard what is presented to us, because each of us will take an oath that I take very seriously, to render impartial justice.
Now, Jake, let me tell you kind of the most important thing here. We're all kind of reading tea leaves on what people are saying, particularly when they're back home in their states. Here's what actually matters. Both Collins and Murkowski seem to be behind Majority Leader McConnell's idea or proposal at this point in time to just start the trial with arguments from the defense, arguments from the House managers, and then kind of see what happens after that related to witnesses and whether to subpoena documents. Obviously, that's what Democrats want in the near term, right away, in an opening resolution. The bigger question, I think, becomes at this point in time, when Susan Collins says she's open to witnesses, or Lisa Murkowski appears to be in the same exact place, will they vote for with Democrats when they actually get to that point? That, Jake, we'll have to wait and see on.
All right. Thank you. Any comment?
Yeah, I think they're going to vote with McConnell. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think they're going to vote with McConnell. They, you know, they're trying to cover their behinds or something. Mm-hmm. You know, they did this before. And I think that the bottom line is being open as opposed to insisting on witnesses, just saying I'm open to the idea. Mm-hmm. What does that mean? That means nothing. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just mamby-pamby. And when it comes time to vote, they're going to vote with McConnell. And I have no doubt, no question about that. I mean, if you're adamant about it, if you're saying you're taking this oath, this oath to be impartial, and then you still vote with McConnell.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're trying to have it both ways.
Yeah, exactly.
And I don't believe Murkowski or Collins.
Collins, okay.
No.
Very good.
I don't believe it for a second.
Royd is the telegraph handout. What is that talking about? Royd is
Is this the part? Yeah, I think.
I think They may have.
This is the part they want me to.
Does she have it?
No, I have it here.
Oh, you have? Oh,
yeah,
you
this is okay. China, Russia, and Iran. They're going to hold a joint naval drills. Mm-hmm. So this is China, Iran, and Russia will hold joint naval drills starting on Friday in the Indian Ocean and the Gulf of Oman. China's defense ministry said that on this past Thursday amid heightened tensions in the region between Iran and the United States. China is going to send what's called the Xining, a guided missile destroyer, to the drills, which will last until Monday, and are meant to deepen cooperation between the three countries. Their navy's ministry spokesman, Wu Zhang, told a military briefing. The drill is a normal military exchange between the three armed forces and was in line with international law and practices, Wu said. It's not necessarily connected with the regional situation, he said, without elaborating. The Gulf of Oman is a particularly sensitive waterway that connects the Strait of Hormuz, through which about one-fifth of the world's oil passes. Mm-hmm. And you know how narrow that gets, and we're a little concerned about that, which in turn connects to the Gulf of Oman. The drills are also coming at a time of fraught tensions between the United States and Iran. Friction has increased since last year when the U.S. President Donald Trump pulled the United States out of the Iran 2015 nuclear deal with the six nations and reimposed sanctions on the country, of course, crippling its economy. Washington has proposed that U.S.-led naval mission after several attacks in May and June on international merchant ships, including Saudi tankers in Gulf waters, which the United States blamed on Iran. Well, they denies, and Iran, of course, denies these accusations. Mm-hmm. Tensions have risen in the region not only over Iran's disputed nuclear program, but also over September's attack on Saudi oil facilities, blamed on Iran by the United States and Saudi Arabia. Mm-hmm. Iran also denies their involvement in that. So the Indian Ocean, Gulf of Oman, are key areas for international trade and maintaining security in the waterways. It's an important task, Brigadier General Abul Fazel Shirkarchi, spokesman for Iran's armed forces, said on Wednesday. The drill will take place for supporting an increasing experience in the security and international trade in the region. He said, and China has close diplomatic trade and energy ties with Iran, but China also has good relationships with Iran's regional. Yeah. So it's, you know, this is a whole bit about, you know, as we know, the Hormuz is a very narrow area, and we're trying to get, if you're trying to get oil, one-fifth of the oil's supplies into the Gulf, Iran could cause quite a problem there for us.
Right. Trump made the comment, Consular, that he was planning an attack, but we got him.
Yeah.
Talking about.
Well, you know, why does that stop the attack?
Yeah.
If it's so imminent, that's what gets me. It's so imminent that it's as if it's about to kick off now. So you killed him. That doesn't stop the attack from going forward if there were an attack. And now he's believing his intelligence agencies where he didn't believe them for the last 3 years. Mm-hmm. He doesn't believe the CIA or what do we have, 16, 17 agencies. And now all of a sudden he believes. I think we all know what's happening here. Mm-hmm. And it's very unfortunate.
And Cliff, another thing that's important about what's going on with this situation is that all this kind of culminates and works together in a very, very scary way, because you have this alliance between China, which we have a trade war going on with. Mm-hmm. We have Iran, with which we have an issue with. There, we pulled out the nuclear trade agreement. Now we've done an attack on them. We've been going back and forth with them over the last few years, and North Korea. So these types of things, and also don't forget Russia, which we've been going tit for tat with the last few years as well. But North Korea is also thrown into that mix. All these different regions are aligning themselves economically and are starting to change their economic policies to take over more resources around the world. They're moving into Africa. They're starting to make agreements even in Europe and parts of Asia, because they have the connections and the wealth and resources to finance building projects, dams, waterways, seaports, things like that. And don't forget, Iran used to be the third largest exporter of oil in OPEC until we put the sanctions on them.
Right.
So all these things are coming into play. Mm-hmm. So eventually, the way without really calling ourselves isolationists, we're actually moving into more of an isolationist stance. And all that does is it causes us to fall back and suffer in the long run economically. All great powers have fallen by being isolationist. China is a great example of watching what happens when you're isolationist.
Very good. Yeah. Anybody else?
Yeah, but one of the underlying things, and I think we were mentioning it a little earlier,
mm-hmm.
that really is worrisome to me, is that the people who are in these countries are now standing up, and they're looking at their human rights. And that's going to destabilize these countries even more.
Mm-hmm.
And as these dictators, because we have a whole line of dictators now, you know, between Putin, Iran, you know,
North Korea, Hungary, Philippines.
Yep. You know, everyone is, these dictators are lining up as a front. And what they're saying is that we have the right to put people under bondage and to have them follow our dictates to the letter.
Mm-hmm.
And if anyone steps out of line, we will kill them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And this is what we are supposed to be standing up as a country. So the thing that I think is really important is that people realize around the world that our Constitution, the way we wrote it, and what we're supposed to be standing for as a military force is to enforce the rights of people around the world on a humanitarian basis. And if we are faltering at the top right now with trust, with honesty, with making irrational decisions, not relying on our resources within our country, we are in big trouble.
Yeah. Excellent point, Colonel. Excellent. Doctor.
Mm-hmm. And he's treating this like it's a war game.
Yeah.
You know, this is what's getting me, you know, especially when I heard him say, and I terminated him. You know, that was like his best Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Right, yeah, I'm the Terminator.
Voice, you know, he's terminated.
Terminated.
You know, and just his whole demeanor about it, you know, and the bragging about killing people.
Yeah.
You know, it's bad for us.
Well, he's on his golf course. He's on his golf course killing.
For
I mean, this man is comparable to killing a vice president of our country
or
chairman of Joint Chiefs. You know, I mean, he's, this is
serious. He opened the door to people killing people who are in political positions now, who are in part of the governments.
Great conversation. Thank you all, Colonel Dr. Damon Arnold, Rochelle Crump, Attorney Ernesto Borges, and, of course, Sean Claiborne. You folks doing a good job, as usual. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.
And Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
And Cliff looks better every year.
Oh, thank you.
He's getting stronger.
Thank you, Duke. Appreciate it, Doc. Stay with us. We'll be back.